Does free market capitalism have a moral foundation? Is virtue a necessary component of a free market? And has the Christian worldview contributed to the creation of wealth that we've experienced in the United States? Hi, this is Richard Nelson, your host, and thank you for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters. Joining us to talk further and to help answer these questions is Dave Bratt, former congressman from Virginia, who currently serves as vice provost for engagement in public relations at Liberty University. Mr. Bratt holds a BA in business administration from Hope College, a Master of Arts in Divinity from Princeton Theological Seminary, and a PhD in economics from American University. Prior to becoming a congressman, he was a professor at Randolph-Macon College. Bratt lives in Virginia with his wife, Laura, and they have two children. Dave, welcome to the Commonwealth Matters.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, we just had a call with you last week, and it was a joy to get to know you a little bit better, but you're going to be joining us at a conference we're holding here in Kentucky in October. It's called Towards a Better Bluegrass, Sources of Kentucky's Economic Strength. And as me and my staff brainstormed as to who would be a good keynote speaker, we had some high-profile names that we had talked about, and you came up at the top of that list. And one of the reasons why was because of your political experience, but also your academic background, as it is grounded in a Christian worldview and economics. We thought, who better would we have to keynote this event than you, that you've got experience in both. So we're glad that you're going to be joining us soon. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in the program, but we're glad that you're joining us on the Commonwealth Matters program as well.
Glad to be with you, man. I'm looking forward to being down there and seeing some of my old Kentucky friends too.
Well, hey, I've got several things I want to cover in this fairly short period of time that we have. I want to go back to a role that you held at Randolph-Macon's BB&T Moral Foundations of Capitalism program. That was back just for a couple of years, from 2010 to 2012. And I read the title of that. I don't know a lot about the details, but what are you talking about when I see the terms moral foundation and capitalism together? I have an understanding, but I think many of the listeners might wonder, well, what the heck? Capitalism isn't moral, is it? So tell us, what are you talking about? What did you do with that Moral Foundations of Capitalism program?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And it's very complex, right? You can slice this onion about a million ways, right? So the modern approach is that economics is a social science, and therefore, by definition, has nothing to do with ethics, right? Science describes the way the world is, and you know, going back to David Hume, ethics is about the way the world ought to be. So whenever you hear an economist saying the way the world ought to be, they're not being an economist, they're being something else. And Adam Smith knew better. And so the Moral Foundations is an attempt, you know, and it's just a 1% sliver, that's the problem, an attempt of a small body of economists, you know, a lot of Christians, some Aristotelians in there, the Randians are in there, right? And they want to go beyond this just descriptive thing because it's weak. And they don't even do the descriptive thing, right? They're all following political agendas right now. In a way you can tell that. Just look at the top three issues in the polls right now. Number one, I think, is inflation and you know, the debt and the economy and productivity. Two is the border invasion. Three is the endless wars. There's no economic analysis on any of the biggest three issues that Americans care about right now, which is just kind of stunning. And so the moral foundations I taught for, you know, 20 years about, and I probably made some mistakes too. I relied a little too much on the classical liberal tradition, right? That, you know, is John Locke going up through Madison and weighing heavily on the philosophers. In most ethics books, it's Aristotle and then Kant and then the utilitarians, Mill and Bentham. And so, you know, they're all great. They're stimulating. It's intellectually fun. But the problem with those three schools of thought is they don't have any followers. And I'm not exaggerating, right? You got about 8 billion people on the planet. None of them are Kantians or Aristotelians or you know, you whatever. And so what are people? They're religious. And it's just stunning that in academia, right, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, anywhere you go, there's no attention given to the religious traditions. And those are the traditions that people live out their ethical lives. So once you start digging in, and even Christians have probably used too much of kind of the, you know, the classical liberal tradition. That's just contract, you know, John Locke, contractual kind of terminology, et cetera. And the medieval folks might have known better, right? And, you know, the Tolkien's and the, you know, the people like Lord of the Rings and that kind of stuff. And the people who like some of the novels, there's a far richer, deeper reality beyond even the contract theory and the ethical terms in the Christian setup, right? There's a God beneath it. And that God has revealed himself in many ways, and through reason is one of them. Jesus is the Logos, right? The Word. And the Word means thinking and speaking. And so, you know, I'm just starting to give some of the ways people can dig down into the tradition, but it's a Herculean undertaking that we have to make because the modern world is falling apart. People have mental illness. You know, Jordan Peterson's all over this stuff. The breakdown of this morality and of this worldview is causing massive pain to people, and they're not even aware of why they're experiencing it.
So, Dave, are you suggesting that the reason why we live in an age of mental illness, an age of anxiety, is because we have divorced ourselves from God? Is this what you're getting to?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only divorced ourselves from God, but a lot of people are worshiping false gods. And we all do, right? It's just a matter of degree. You know, we're all sinners. So I'm not acting like I'm some Pharisee, you know, judging everybody. But it's the challenge to follow God, to imitate Christ. And yes, the young kids, the parents are starting to worship the kids like they're gods. They do everything for the kid. They prop up the kid. And the kids walking around doing, you know, social media 4 hours a day on average, I think. A lot of kids are up to 7 or 8 hours a day. And we expect mental health. And, you know, obviously that's part of the economy. It's a sad state of affairs that we don't pay attention to human capital and education. I could go off on education. What are the kids learning about the history of thought or theology or God or philosophy in K to 12? Nothing. In higher education, they're learning that all of those things are bad, right? In all the Ivies across the country, it's now just mainstream news. There's not really any debate on what I'm saying anymore.
So, Dave, you mentioned the word classical liberal, and that term, we hear the word liberal used today in the context of politics. When you say classical liberal, and it's really the classical liberal tradition that shaped the formation of the United States, when you use that term, what do you mean?
Yeah, no, that's right, right? The Western synthesis, right? The Judeo-Christian West, and that synthesis is the synthesis of Greek reason along with the Judeo-Christian religion. And those two guardrails have been very helpful to civilization, right? If the religious people go off the rails too much, turn into Gnosticism where you just got the spirit flying all over the place, that's not good. If you just have reason alone, you can end up with authoritarian leaders like Hitler and the smartest shrinks in the German Gestapo. But those two together have been very good. And so, yeah, when I refer to classical liberalism, it's kind of the outworking of the Enlightenment project, right? Human reason, rationality, in complementary with the faith. But even that classical setup has broken down to some extent, right? The classical folks themselves, right? I'm going to get real boring here, but logical positivism and Carnap and Wittgenstein and all these guys, the Open Society and Its Enemies by Karl Popper, that open society concept has now morphed into Davos land with the billionaire, I'm blanking on his name. But that open society and that modern classical view was open to everything, right? The open society, how can you be against that? But what they weren't open to was Russian culture, Chinese culture, Indian culture, Christian religion, Jewish religion. So that classical, even the classical thing collapsed upon itself. They tried to get rid of God, but they ended up eliminating science. If you go read that literature on the history of science or whatever, you'll find they wanted, you know, epistemological certainty about, have you ever seen a science? Do you have any sense perception of science? No. So they used that trick to get rid of God, and they ended up getting rid of their whole system. And it's a fun, I'll tell you, it's a fun thing to study, and it helps sharpen your Christian skills. So I do recommend everybody catch up on this stuff.
Dave, you've asserted that culture matters in economic markets, and you believe that the culture that produced Adam Smith was a Protestant culture, and that the ethics of that culture are important to understanding market efficiency. So essentially, and you go on to make the case that it's been a Christian ethos that has shaped many of our institutions here in the United States, and it's shaped the idea, well, our economy and our understanding of economy. So explain more. You said earlier, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you said that underlying this worldview is God. And then going on to what you said eventually was that we've divorced ourselves from God. So we've had this, the underpinning of God in this biblical view of culture, biblical view of the economy and market efficiency. And we're reaping the fruits of that today. We still are reaping the fruits of it. And yet there's this divorce that's been taking place at least over several decades. Are there Christian, here's my question, I guess, are there Christian voices, more Christian voices besides yourself that are articulating this, that there is an ethos that influences our thinking when it comes to economy and market efficiency? Anybody, are you the only guy out there? Or are there other voices that are breaking through?
No. Yeah, no, there's tons of people, even the secular, right? The Jewish scholar who wrote The Closing of the American Mind, Alan Bloom, right? Go read him. There's your classical liberal that just reams the leftist project and reams Marx and et cetera in just beautiful language showing the entire Western trajectory. And then you got Jordan Peterson out there. You've got a book called Return of the Strong Gods by R.R. Reno. He was the editor of First Things. That's a fascinating read right now. There are tons of people, and even the term ethos, right? We're living on borrowed times. The ethos and the ethic is still with us, but the faith in God is what caused all of it, right? The princes, right? I mean, Jesus at zero, right? In the first place, when you restart the calendar at zero for someone, seems like a big deal to me, right? I mean, that's a big deal, right? So, right, we start the calendar at zero for Jesus. And people say, well, he was ineffectual. He just turned the other cheek and loved everybody. And it didn't have any effect on politics, and we shouldn't be involved in politics or anything. Well, I'd like you to explain then how in the world the Roman Empire became Christian in 325 under Constantine, right? And then Charlemagne, and then Magna Carta, and then the Reformation, and Luther, and Calvin, and the role of the lesser magistrates, and Marx, or one of his types, said, once Calvin democratized the church pews, the rest was done. And that set in place. The faith in God caused all of it, because the new thing in terms of politics that was real is that we're made in the image of God. Every single person's made in the image of God. And if you just drill down on that concept and implement it into the politics, and then the Madison stuck around at Princeton and was the first graduate student in Hebrew. Well, if you study Hebrew, you know this thing with the fall, right? The snake and the apple and all this, right? And so human nature's not good. And if you know human nature's not good, then you would do a separation of powers. But even these guys couldn't anticipate a day like today. They absolutely assumed, all of them, right? Just assumed, you know, we made a republic if you can keep it. All these famous phrases. They absolutely assumed the Judeo-Christian religious tradition would be with us. Not just an ethos, and now it's not even the ethos. And so what's going to replace it? And the answer is K-12 education, where they don't believe in anything. And so we're on a terrible trajectory, right? The Wall Street Journal had poll. Religiosity and patriotism are just going way down. You know, tens and 20s of points in a five-year period, way down. And so this is a scary time right now.
We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. Have you ever wondered why America is the most prosperous nation in history? We've certainly been blessed, but we take the conditions for prosperity for granted. That's why CPC is hosting the Toward a Better Bluegrass Conference. We've invited some of the top thinkers and leaders to speak about the sources of our economic strength. biblical principles, America's founding framework, and individual capacity are a few issues that we'll be addressing. So please join us on October the 18th in Lexington. And for more information, go to our website, commonwealthpolicycenter.org, and we look forward to seeing you there. If you're just joining us, you're tuned into the Commonwealth Matters. I'm your host, Richard Nelson, here with former Congressman from Virginia, Dave Bratt. He is also a vice provost at Liberty University, and we are talking about a moral basis for our economy. Dave, I checked out your latest X post. You've taken a little break from X, but the latest one I saw said this. I'd like you to respond. The only way to secure the promises of our constitutional republic is to live a life of virtue. And that was just a repost you had, but explain what you're talking about. Are you saying that in order to have these various promises of our republic, part of that is to have the free market, right? Where the individual has the freedom to pursue their God-given calling and to create wealth and to preserve that wealth for their family. Are you saying that we need to be a virtuous people?
Yeah, absolutely. And beyond virtue, right? So Aristotle proposed the virtues, right? The classical virtues, they're fine, they're good. But if you don't have that faith and the energy undergirding those virtues, that even the virtues of themselves won't do the trick. And now where you can really see what's going on is, you know, China and India copied our cookbook on economic growth and free markets, right? It's their communist system. Their government sector, by the way, is smaller than ours. Right? Communist, totalitarian, surveillance. China's government's 14% of GDP. The U.S. is 18% of GDP. Just so you got your facts straight out there. Right. So now we talk about wanting free markets. We don't have any free markets right now. We got the Magnificent Seven. Their market cap is something on the order of 15 trillion. They're worth more than all the European markets. Just seven firms. They're all monopolies. We got censorship going on. We got the military industrial complex. We got wars going on all over the place in the last few years. So there's no free markets right now. Right. And China's collapsing right now. China is collapsing. Just go look at their capital inflows and outflows, and what you can just see that alone. And then they got demographic and real estate and all sorts of problems. But there were signs that they copied the cookbook in a secular fashion using some loosening, some opening to exports and free markets somewhat. And it worked like a charm because it's easy to grow when you start from zero, right? So they grow and they're growing great. But they're a sign for us if you don't have the real deal underneath that. Right? That real faith, the real work ethic, the reason, Protestants, Catholics work is because in both the catechisms, in both the Heidelberg Catechism and the Baltimore Catechism, it says, what's the chief end of man? Why are you on the planet? And the answer in both is to glorify God. And if you get up every day and you say, the reason I'm here is to glorify God, it doesn't matter if it's raining out or what it's doing on, whatever, you're going to pick your job, you're going to pick your education, you're going to pick your family, you're going to pick your city, based on how do I best glorify God? And everyone used to do that. And now we don't all do that. And so in a nutshell, that's the virtuous. If everyone does that, you get the United States of America that we used to have that was just the envy of the world across every sector and sphere you can imagine.
Of course, Dave, there has been a push to keep moral values and moral convictions out of the public arena. We face this for much of the 20th century, and it's not working out very well, is it? To divorce, in particular in the workplace, because there is a moral component to business practices, there's a moral component to our economy and to the free market. And if you keep God at arm's length, and if you say, really, those are your values and your principles, but don't impose them on us. In fact, what we've seen is the far left has brought ideology into the workplace. A really good example is the Human Rights Campaign. About 3-4 decades ago, they began rating companies based on how LGBT friendly they were. Then they began to work on policies for those workplaces that did not have, for example, domestic partnership benefits. They would downgrade them on their scorecard if they didn't have those policies. They would upgrade them if they embraced those policies. Well, now you have the majority of Fortune 500 companies that are considered LGBT friendly. Now, the problem with this is that not that there's a vacuum of moral values in the workplace and in these big companies, but it's that somebody else's moral values have prevailed. Isn't that right?
That's exactly right. The Marxist project, right? It used to be the capitalist versus the workers. Now the neo-Marxist project has put everybody in all these buckets. So that's why you get all these letters in the alphabet and all this. And that's their clear ideology, right? And Marx is said, right, ethics, there's no God, there's no ethics, there's no values, there are no human rights for the Marxists, right? And if you have to ask any of your leftist friends at a Fortune 500 firm, where do human rights come from? And they'll be stumped. They can't even go a sentence. They're shallower than a wading pool. And so they seriously, right? They can't answer. And so that is the Marxist project, and it's been very successful. They have said, let's get rid of all these values because it's a superstructure created by the capitalists to keep the people down. Well, the people are starting to wake up now. And now, you know, the old Republican Democrat lines are all broken. Right now, you got basically a populist avalanche, right? You got Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr. joining Trump and Republicans and whatever. All political views are my own. Versus the left. The left, the other day, I think Harris came out and said, I've got all the leaders of the Fortune 100 are for me, right? And if you look at the Magnificent Seven, all of them are on the left now, except for Musk. And so the big banks, the big defense establishment, the big pharma, the big agriculture, RFK's going nuts on all that stuff on you make America healthy again. Thank God. That's a good thing. And so you're right. They have won. We've lost. And now this gets to the crux of it. Why have Christians become so weak? That is the fundamental question that's left at the end of the day. And that requires some serious soul searching and some digging. Christians have become passive. They're scared. As long as they're okay, I got rich suburban friends all over the place. As long as they're okay and they got a high paying job and a couple nice cars and their kids in good schools and they're going to go to university and get a job, it's all done. It's fine. You know, don't rock the boat, right? I don't care. I don't care about all this other stuff you just mentioned. And that's not a world we want to live in for too long, or it's going to be a problem.
And I want to carry on this thought here. If Christianity is true, and if there's a God as the foundation of any civilization and God as the foundation of an economy, and this God and this worldview has created the culture we live in today and this economy that we're enjoying today, so long as we push against that, wouldn't you agree that we cannot expect this civilization and this economy to continue on as we've been blessed throughout our history?
Yeah. No, it's not continuing on, right? And I'm an economist, and there's a guy at Northwestern, he's probably a Democrat. He's the Robert Nelson, he's the granddaddy of productivity studies. Productivity in the United States of America has been going down for 70 years in a row. The OMB and the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, has the productivity forecast for the next 30 years. It continues to go down for the next 30 years. So there's your economic growth. Human capital is terrible. The Democrats just had their convention of a joy fest. As soon as you walk out of the door in Chicago, there's not so much joy. The poor kids there in the third grade, the literacy rate is 11%. That's your economy. Those are kids made in the image of God. And so you can bash the left and you can feel good about it. But the conservatives, we don't have enough cities where we can say, here's my conservative city. We built the city on a hill right here. Our kids, they're acing everything. They're studying hard. We got a work ethic and it's missing. And where's the church in the middle of this question, right? And so that's the heavy knitting that's got to get done here.
Dave, a lot of people have given up on the federal government acting responsibly when it comes to tax dollars and government involvement and government overreach. What would you say to the person who still wants to make a difference? Maybe they're looking at the local level, their local government or state government. Is there hope at the local level to establish some kind of fiscal integrity, responsible spending, responsible tax policy? What would you advise those people?
Yeah, no, sure. At the local level, right? There's Moms for Liberty and Moms for Justice and all these voter groups now getting together. They're having a huge influence on the country. The school boards, the county boards, all you need is five people to win. I mean, I'm just making up, no, you know, three out of five or whatever, right? Four out of seven. But you just need a few people and you can turn your whole thing around and you can restore credibility very quickly. So that's, I applaud everybody. And the state governments in Virginia and the Commonwealth, I'm not as hopeful. Maybe you guys in Kentucky are probably stronger and better than we are. But then the major advice to everybody is the thing that moves DC are lists. And so everybody, and the Republicans are not good at sharing. The Dems, all political views are my own. The Dems are great at sharing stuff, and they're unified. When they run, Republicans don't run on anything, right? You couldn't name the three issues the speaker's named or the head of the Senate on the Republican side are running on. None. Trump's got three. The RNC's got three, whatever. But they don't run on anything, right? So you got to get lists, huge numbers of people, start local, and then build it state. And if you're onto something, the people will respond. And then you got the lists, and then you go to your congressman or woman and you say, hey, I got 10,000 people here. They're going to vote. If you vote wrong on that bill right there, you're bye-bye. You're gone. And they'll respond in a heartbeat, right? There's if I had a constituent come to me with 10,000 people on a list, boom, they got my attention.
Dave, I want to speak to the church. This churches have come up in our conversation here. You've got an MDiv from Princeton Theological Seminary. So you think about these things, the church and Christians engaging. What would be your advice to pastors, especially a pastor today who thinks, yeah, the economy and business, that's outside of my wheelhouse? What would you say to them as far as should they speak on these issues? Should they have sermons that talk about a biblical view of the economy or a biblical view of free markets? What would be your advice to them?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, on the easiest way to see it is just look back 200 years, 1776, and what were the preachers saying? And then what's changed and what's gone wrong, right? So all the preachers back then, they had no trouble going to war, fighting with the British, fighting for economics and taxes, whatever, right? And then you can go right up through history, and roughly everything's pretty solid, even up to World War II. Most of the preachers were still probably intact across the country. So it's all fallen apart in 60 or 70 years, right? And so there's some great people out, you know, David Barton, Bill Federer, on, you know, they'll tell you, go read the Bible. That's what those guys would say, right? They're the experts on the founding, the biblical influences on the founding. Deuteronomy was the most widely cited book of all the founding fathers by far. And there's the wisdom of God and how you set up a government and all that wisdom. And we've just lost it. And so, you know, the pastors are trying to be popular and have rock concerts and, you know, have the kids be energized. Yeah, you want that. I mean, but if the church isn't the church, I don't know what we're doing.
Very good. Dave Bratt, former congressman from Virginia and vice provost at Liberty University. Thank you so much for joining us on the Commonwealth Matters. And also, again, thank you for coming to join us in Kentucky on October the 18th. You're speaking in Lexington on this very important topic of a Christian view of the economy. Appreciate your time, brother.